Our next speaker is one of the very best economists commenting on public policy today, and one of the best known. He's on television and in the big publications, including the really big ones like the Reader's Digest and the Wall Street Journal often. He's an economist at the Cato Institute. Before that, he worked for Dick Armey on the Joint Economic Committee, so he's been keeping bad company for a long time. Before that, he was at the American Immigration Institute, whose mission was to promote and celebrate the good effects of immigration. And he has a major book coming out this year to be called The Great Immigration Debate. I'm an admirer of Stephen Moore's work myself, and I'm sure many of you are too. Stephen.
Thank you very much. Dave mentioned the fact that I started an organization with a couple of other people a couple of years ago to promote immigration and to celebrate immigration, and we thought long and hard about what we should call this group. One of the purposes of the group was to take on the major anti-immigration group in Washington, D.C., and America Fair. So we came, our original name of the group was Unfair, but we decided to change that to the American Immigration Institute. I get up every morning at about 7:30, and at 8 in the morning, a woman named Lillian comes to our house. Lillian is a Guatemalan, and she is our daycare worker. She takes care of our 1 and 3-year-old. We tried to get American workers. In fact, we went through about 5 Americans to do this job. They were all not good workers. Lillian is probably the best worker that we've seen, and she's extraordinarily successful. She goes to graduate school at night and so forth. We don't know how we would run our lives without Lillian. And it's a very typical thing. Daycare workers are very commonly immigrants today. I think a lot of the conservatives who are against immigration don't have children. Second of all, when I walk out the door, we have a private garbage collection service where I live, which is extraordinarily successful. And these Mexicans who do the work are the hardest. I mean, they look like they're sprinters. They run and they pick up the garbage every day. It's very different from when I lived in Washington, D.C., where we didn't have private garbage collection and so forth. And that's a really great benefit for us. Third, when I walk to work, every day I go by a Korean deli. I think probably there's one like this in virtually every neighborhood in America where you live and so forth. And every day, Mr. Kim is behind the counter. Mr. Kim is one of these people who insists on calling it a Wuban. Mr. Kim, it's a Reuben, a Reuben. He insists on calling it a Wuban. I keep telling him we have a culture and language we're trying to preserve here. But he's the kind of person who is there virtually every day behind the counter, and he brightens up my life. Then I go to work, and when I get to the bus station, if I miss the bus, this is one of the great benefits, if I miss the bus, there's a Pakistani cab driver who sits by the bus stop every day, and if I miss it, he smiles because he knows I'm going to take his cab. It's a great benefit to me because I know if he's a backstop, if I miss the bus, I can take this bus. Then I get to work. We just opened a new office building in Cato Institute. If any of you are in Washington, I urge you to come by and see. We're in it's a beautiful building, but we're in a very bad location of Washington, one of the most dangerous areas. And we're also very secluded. We're not near anything, which is a little bit frustrating. And we always thought, what are we going to do for lunch around here? And what has happened is that an Indian woman has set up a hot dog stand right in front of our building every day. And it's extraordinary to me. I don't know how she possibly sells enough hot dogs every day to remain in business. But for everyone in Cato, it's been a great benefit, especially during days when it's pouring down rain where we'd have to walk literally eight blocks or a mile to get to anywhere to eat. She is always out there. And in fact, even when Washington, D.C. was virtually closed down for a week during the middle of winter when we had a huge winter storm, this Indian woman had her stand open in front of our building when virtually nothing else was open in the city. And then when I go home at night, we have a 1-year-old who, any of you who have young children can relate to this, that every once in a while we run out of milk in the middle of the night. And this is a crisis. I know we often overuse the term crisis in Washington, but this is a crisis when you have a screaming child in the middle of the night and you don't have milk. And so thank God, about four blocks away, there's a 7-Eleven where, of course, any of you who have seen The Simpsons knows that Abdul is always behind the counter there. It was very funny. Sam Francis, who I think is a marvelous man, he's very misguided on immigration policy, wrote a column a few months ago saying that, you know, you just can't go to a 7-Eleven anymore and not have an Arab behind the counter, as if this was some kind of problem with the American culture that all the Arabs had taken over the 7-Elevens. The point I'm trying to make here, though, is that I'm going to give a presentation on why immigration is good, and I'm just trying to tell you that this is all self-interest motivated, because the only people I know who work in America are immigrants. What is it about this issue of immigration that makes really brilliant people like John O'Sullivan and Peter Brimelow and others say some of the silliest things? I have total respect. I work for John on a daily, weekly basis and so forth. I think Peter is probably the top investigative reporter probably in the country and so forth. But on this issue, it's very frustrating to me because for the last 10 years or so, I have been debating the left on this issue. I debated people from the AFL-CIO, the Sierra Club, FAIR, people like Garrett Hardin and Paul Ehrlich, people who don't share any of the values of any of those people of us in this room. And they have used very fallacious arguments and relied on junk science and so forth to make their claim. And it's very distressing and depressing to me to see now the right enter this debate, or many in the right, and use many of these same arguments, in fact, to promote immigration. Now, I'm an economist, and one of the points that I would disagree strongly with John O'Sullivan about is when John said that there is a difference of opinion among economists whether immigration is good or not for the economy. Ladies and gentlemen, there is no difference of opinion. In fact, the economic literature is, have a stack of studies from here to the ceiling on the economic effects of immigration. It all points in the same direction, virtually all. And in fact, to prove this point, what I did 2 years ago was did a survey of the top 40 economists in the country, past presidents of the American Economic Association, the Nobel Prize winners, and so forth. And I just asked them, what's the impact of immigration on America? And we asked four questions. The first was, what impact has 20th century immigration had on America? And the choices were very positive, positive, negative, very negative. 80% said very positive impact, and the other 20% said positive impact. None of them said that immigration in this century has had a negative impact. And remember, we're talking here about people like George Stigler and Milton Friedman and the very finest economists in the country, the people who have risen to the top of their profession. And then, interestingly enough, we asked them, well, what about illegal immigration? Because everyone's against illegal immigration. What's the impact of illegal immigration? And 75% of these eminent economists said that even illegal immigration has a very positive impact on the American economy. Only about 11% said that immigration is having a negative impact. Now, it is true, however, that there are some economists who make the case that immigration is having a negative impact on the economy. And in fact, this is what I find most frustrating, is that the people who are promoting, let me tell you the major economist in the country who's promoting an anti-immigration position. This is a man by the name of Donald Huddle. Don Huddle, I would never say this about a colleague, but I've read through all of his stuff. He is truly a crackpot. Tell you some of the things that this man argues. For instance, Don Huddle published a study about 5 years ago, which got an enormous amount of publicity, which said that for every 100 immigrants in the country, they displace between 25 and 50 American workers. Not just in the year that the immigrant comes, but forever. That is, that these people are permanently displaced from the American workforce. And he has, just to give you an indication of what this fellow is like, he has quotes in there saying things like that these immigrants are being exploited by, quote, greedy employers and employers and so forth. And then he published a study about a year ago, which has gotten an enormous amount of publicity. In fact, it was front page news and papers all over the country, which said that immigrants use more in public services than they pay in taxes. And he indicated that by his reckoning that the result was that there was about $40 billion more in public services used by immigrants than immigrants pay in taxes. So Julian Simon and I and others started to look at this research because it got so much publicity. By the way, Donald Huddle, we got his curriculum vitae, has never had a paper published in a scientific journal in his life. Whereas people like Julian Simon and so forth, who argue on the opposite, have had huge numbers of articles. Now, I'm not saying that having an article published in a scientific academic journal is the greatest gatekeeper mechanism that we have to keep out junk science, but it is a fairly, it does, let me put it like this, a lot of good research doesn't get published, but at least it does keep out some of the worst junk science that is being promoted. Now, here are some of the things that that Donald Huddle says in his study, for example. Donald Huddle said that there were about 12 million immigrants who entered the country in the 1980s. And this was a very, we couldn't figure out here how he got this number, 12 million immigrants, because it's way higher than the Census Bureau and so forth indicates. And what we found out was that Donald Huddle made an incredible error in his study. He double counted the immigrants. Remember in the mid-1980s, we had a legalization program where, in effect, we had about 2 to 3 million people who had been in the country illegally who we legalized. What Don Hunnell did in his study was he double counted these people. He counted them when they entered the country, and then he counted them again when they were legalized. I'm just trying to tell you this because a lot of conservatives do go around citing Don Hunnell's study. Then Don Hunnell said that another mistake that he made was he said that there are about 9 million illegal immigrants in the United States. Well, in fact, the Census Bureau, the National Academy of Sciences, and so forth have done many, many studies on this, and they indicate that it's probably about half that money, that many illegal immigrants in the country. But Huddle used a figure about twice as large. It's very reminiscent, by the way, of what the left has done on this homelessness issue. Remember where they went around saying, oh, there's 4, 8, 10 million homeless people in the United States, even when we had Census Bureau data and so forth, which indicated that the numbers were much, much smaller. Then Huddle left out the major form of taxes that immigrants pay, which is Social Security. The major form of most of us pay in terms of taxes is Social Security taxes. So in fact, if you use Don Huddle's methodology, everyone in this room uses more public services than we pay in taxes because the major form of taxes that we pay is Social Security. Now, let me quickly go to this impact of this question of a historical pause on immigration. This will only take a second, but could I use that? Confusion in this conference is the idea that we are under siege by immigrants and that we are at a historic high level of immigration. Well, it is true that if you look at the number of people coming in any given year, of course, we let in about 1 million immigrants per year, but of course that's an irrelevant statistic because what's important, especially if we're talking about the impact of immigrants on our culture, is how many immigrants are we letting in as related to how many people are already here. And what you see here is that we are at a very low level of immigration right now. In fact, we would have to allow in about 5 times as many immigrants as we do today to have the same impact that we did, for instance, at the turn of the century during the period of the Ellis Island immigrants. And I want you to notice one other thing about this figure. One of the points that a lot of conservatives are making is it's time for an historic pause in immigration. And we have had historic pauses. For example, in the 1860s and so forth, and we had a historic pause right before the turn of the century and so forth. The interesting thing about these historic pauses is that even during these periods of historic pause, we let in fewer immigrants than we do now. So I would argue that, in fact, what we have today is an historic pause in immigration. In fact, maybe it's time to bring this historic pause to an end. If you'd show the next figure. No, that does not include illegal immigrants, which is about, which would add about 300,000 immigrants per year. This just shows foreign-born population as a percentage of immigration. There has been a large increase since the 1960s, but again, we're still well below the historic average for immigration. So the point I'm trying to make here is we are less a country of immigrants today than we have been in virtually throughout our history, except for some periods. Could you put up the next figure, please? This is the population explosion in America. This shows basically population growth over the last five decades. And a lot of conservatives, a lot of liberals are concerned about American population growing out of control. This shows even if we let in 1 million immigrants per year in the 1990s, which is probably a little bit more than we will allow in, that the U.S. population will grow at a slower pace in this decade than it has in any decade since the 50s. Who knows what this is? Population growth. This is basically population growth. We've all seen this very scary statistic. But this curve also represents something else. Does anyone else know what this curve represents? That's pretty close. No, what this represents is life expectancy. One of the great human triumphs of human history is that in the last 100 years or so, life expectancy in the United States has about doubled. And in fact, from about the 1800s, it's had a huge upswing. Now, the reason I make this point is that many people are concerned about the, quote, population explosion, but there are two reasons that U.S. population and world population are growing, and they're both evidence of human triumphs. The first reason is life expectancy. People are living longer. That's a good thing, I would think. Second of all, if you kind of turn that curve around, what you'd see is the other reason that population is growing in the world and in the United States is infant mortality. Infant mortality has been cut by about a third, by about two-thirds since the turn of the century, which is, again, a human triumph. Now, what this means, of course, is that world population is growing because people are living longer and children are living at birth. This is a great human triumph, and yet we see many conservatives and many liberals alike basically decrying this when this is probably one of the greatest triumphs that we see. Now, the point I'm trying to make here is that population growth is not a reason to be concerned about immigration. And finally, I'm sure that most of you are aware of this, but some people make the claim that the reason we don't want immigration is because of scarce natural resources and so forth, and this is emblematic of virtually any natural resource that you want to look at. Natural resources are becoming much and much less scarce over time. In fact, tomorrow when Peter Brimelow and I go to San Francisco to, again, debate this issue, one of the people on the panel is a woman, Virginia Abernathy, who's written a book talking about how we need no more immigration because America is running out of energy. So anyways, the point I'm just trying to make here is that in terms of the demographic impact, there's really nothing to be worried about immigration. And this basically is the same thing. It's just food prices. It shows the historic decline in food. Now, let me make one last point about the cultural argument about immigration and then conclude this. Now, the argument is made that we have a culture to preserve and so forth, and that multiculturalism is a large problem in the United States. I don't think that anyone in this room would deny the fact that multiculturalism is a huge, huge problem. And I don't think that many people in this room would dispute the fact that our culture is under siege. But I would argue that the people who are promoting multiculturalism are not immigrants. They're not Asians. Asians are out there too busy making money to worry about multiculturalism. It's basically fifth-generation white pinheaded liberals on university campuses. Multiculturalism will continue to exist, and the whole idea of quotas and so forth will continue to exist, even if we don't continue to accept immigrants. I would argue also that to the extent the greatest threat to our culture are not the 535 next immigrants who escape over the border illegally, but the 535 people in the U.S. Congress who are destroying our culture. So let's keep our eye on who the enemy is here. Now, in terms of solutions, what should we do? I'm very interested to learn that, in fact, just from the first four speakers, I don't know what Peter is saying, but I'd like to put this to him to see how he would respond to it. But I agree with virtually almost everything that the previous speakers have said. We don't want people to come into this country who commit crimes. We don't want people to come into this country who are going to go on welfare. We don't want necessarily people who are going to come into this country and not learn English and so forth. So what I would propose is a program where essentially what we do is double the number of legal immigrants per year, from about 1 million per year to about 2 million per year, which would still put us at an historic low in terms, well, put us below the national average in terms of what we've had in the past. But in a sense, what we do is with the additional 1 million immigrants we let in per year, we do this on a skill-tested basis, so that the 1 million additional immigrants are essential. You see, in the United States, we have the greatest economic opportunity in the history of mankind. What we can do if we want to is basically skim the cream, drain the brains from the rest of the world, basically be selective. We can take the... Silicon Valley's in the United States and so forth. And so basically the condition, however, of taking these 2 million immigrants is that over 5 years, a kind of residency requirement, any immigrant who goes on welfare is deported. Any immigrant who commits a crime or felony is deported. Any immigrant after 5 years who hasn't learned the English language and so forth should leave. And this should be our policy, and I would wonder what Peter would think about that. Thank you.